Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Huge sports day here in these parts. Girls State Tournament Championship Saturday over at Williams Arena today. Two title games tonight. You've got the Wild on the road against the Blues. You got the Timberwolves on the road at Utah. The Loons are home against LAFC. They have points in their first three. That's at 7:30. And you have the Big Ten tournament over at Williams Arena. Earlier, Wisconsin shocked number three Purdue, 76-75 in overtime. And it looks like Illinois is going to beat Nebraska. The Illini lead the Huskers 90-81 late in the game, championship game on Sunday at Target Center. Over at the X, PWHL, Minnesota beat New York 5-1, the final in that game. Meanwhile, NCAA Women's Hockey Tournament, Minnesota at Clarkson. And that game in overtime, number two, tied at two. Minnesota had a 2-0 lead early. And once again, in overtime, number two, tied at two. Wisconsin shut out St. Lawrence 4-0. Colgate beat Cornell 3-1. And Ohio State beating UMD 8-0 in the third period. So it looks like Ohio State we'll go to the Frozen Four. Wisconsin and Colgate are already there. Who will it be, Minnesota or Clarkson? And then at the U tonight, 3M Arena at Mariucci, Minnesota and Michigan in the Big Ten Men's Hockey Tournament semifinals. So that is a lot going on the local sports scene. Players' Championship, Xander Schauffele leading Wyndham Clark by one in the closing holes of the third round. Once again, at the Players' Championship, TPC of Sawgrass, a handsome leaderboard there, and great crowds for the third round of that event. There were great crowds on the Gulf Coast of Texas for the third test launch of Starship, and we're joined by Stephen Clark from Mars Technica. Stephen, good to visit with you, and thanks for the time.
Anytime, Steve. Happy to be on the show.
Yeah, and Stephen, we have talked about this before. You've seen this rocket up close, the Super Heavy booster and Starship on top, the stainless steel monster. And in just their third test launch, they were able to get to orbital velocity. In other words, they were able to get Starship, or the upper stage, into what amounted to orbital velocity. They could have taken it all the way into orbit, but didn't. The Super Heavy booster almost came back for a controlled landing. They made a lot of progress on just their third test launch.
That's right, Steve. Yeah, major progress for Starship. I think with what we've seen on this flight on Thursday, we could say that Starship is ready to carry satellites into orbit. It has a long way to go to do some of the other things that SpaceX wants to do, like carry people or go to the moon, for example, or do refueling in space. But it's basically ready to do the job that most of the world's other rockets that are expendable do and deploy satellites, and it can carry up 150 tons or more of payload on each mission, which is an order of magnitude over what the Falcon 9 rocket that SpaceX currently flies can do, for example. So We saw Starship get into space. It progressed significantly further into the flight sequence and flight profile than we saw in the first two flights. And we saw Starship go all the way to reentry over the Indian Ocean about 50 minutes or so after launching from Texas. And just spectacular video. If your listeners haven't gone on YouTube or seen any of that video, it is spectacular, particularly the reentry video is just mind-boggling from someone who has seen numerous space missions executed, launches, reentries, landings. To see that video so crisp come back live through Starlink. SpaceX was streaming that video back from Starship through its own Starlink network. So SpaceX has this whole ecosystem of space capabilities that most governments in the world would be envious of. And it was just an amazing, amazing experience to be there in person and incredible to see that video come back from reentry. And again, I think we can say the Starship is ready to carry satellites based on what they demonstrated on this mission. And I wouldn't be surprised if on the next flight or the flight after that, they actually do put some Starlink satellites on there to begin rapidly deploying more Starlink capability into orbit. It's, you know, Starship serves Starlink, Starlink serves Starship. It's all part of SpaceX.
Yeah. And let's start with some of the milestones. Number one, on this third test flight, the 33 Raptor engines all seem to fire and operate flawlessly. I guess we haven't seen all the data, but from what we were able to observe, the Super Heavy booster itself did its job almost flawlessly. The only fly in the ointment was bringing it back, and they were able to do that return burn, if you will, like they do with their Falcon 9 first stages, and they have tremendous success at getting those back to these drone ships or landing them back at the pad, if you will. But the goal is ultimately is to get Super Heavy, this booster, back to the pad. But let's start there. It appeared to operate as designed up until the point of where they would ultimately gently land on what would be a barge or ultimately on land.
Yeah, exactly right. And you mentioned this booster stage has 33 of these methane-fueled Raptor engines. Each one of these engines is big. Each one of these engines is the size of a base of an SUV. And so there are 33 of them clustered under the bottom of this booster. And it's a very complex propulsion system. And having all those engines fire in unison, uniformly, without any failures is a significant accomplishment. And remember, Steve, they did the same thing on the last flight back in November, which didn't make it as far as this week's flight. But the booster on that last flight in November during the launch sequence also performed perfectly from all accounts. So that's two flights in a row they've had perfect engine performance from the Super Heavy booster for the Raptor engines. That's a big, big deal going forward. And you mentioned the only fly in the ointment being the fact that they weren't able to recover or control the final splashdown of the booster. I think that's not entirely surprising to me. It took SpaceX something like 20 flights to recover a Falcon 9 first stage intact and get that to the point where they were able to reuse it. 20 flights. I don't think Starship and Super Heavy, the booster stage specifically, will take that long because SpaceX already kind of knows the algorithms and the techniques and methods they need to recover a booster since they do it so often with Falcon 9. But it wouldn't be surprising to me if, you know, it takes one or two more missions to recover the booster and get it back to the Earth's surface intact. I think, I think that is not entirely unexpected. And again, 10 years ago, every rocket in the world was expendable. And just having the immense capability of 150 tons to orbit that Starship provides that it demonstrated on Thursday is incredible. And I think, give SpaceX a few more months, a few more missions to get the recovery and reuse down.
And let's maybe stop right there for a moment and talk about it. They are prepared to move forward very rapidly, that they have Super Heavy boosters and the upper stage Starship kind of ready to go. If they get the thumbs up, it looks as though that we may see multiple launches and test flights before the end of the year.
Yeah, there are currently four vehicles, Starship and Super Heavy vehicles, either finished or in production down in South Texas. And SpaceX, depending on whether you ask SpaceX or even the FAA, which is responsible for regulating and overseeing all these launches from a safety perspective, both of them are saying 6 to 9 more Starships this year. And I would say 9 is probably ambitious, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see 5 or 6 more Starships before the end of the year, because I think they're at a position now where they can probably launch the next one in the May-June timeframe, based on what we saw from Thursday. And I think getting to almost a monthly cadence by the end of the year is not out of the question.
Wow. Very impressive. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and we'll talk about the performance of Starship, or the upper stage, that actually made it to orbital velocity, but they didn't put it into orbit. And we'll get into some of the things we learned or we know about at this point in time. And I would assume SpaceX at some point in time would release more data from the flight and what exactly happened when that upper stage reached that key orbital velocity. But they didn't put it all the way up there. And we'll get into that with Stephen Clark. I was joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, and he covers space flight for Ars Technica. We'll be right back here on News Talk, 830-WCCO. Stephen Clark joining us, covers space flight for Ars Technica. Steve Thompson in. The launch, the third test flight of Starship. It was fascinating to watch it launch from Texas. I absolutely have to get down there and see this. I want to start there. When my kids were younger, my wife and I were down in Florida, and I think I've mentioned this before. We went out to Kennedy Space Center in the middle of the night, went out to the viewing site, and waited for a pre-dawn launch of second-to-last flight of Columbia. And that was incredible. And I can imagine that seeing a Starship fly is pretty spectacular as well, Stephen.
Yeah, it really is, Steve. I had the fortune of seeing a few space shuttle launches toward the end of the program as well. And, you know, the visually and with the sound and the vibrations, I think the Starship is more spectacular than the space shuttle. And, of course, the space shuttle will have people on it, and that's a different level. Maybe Starship one day will as well, you know, to ramp up your nerves and anxiety. But seeing Starship, just incredible.
Yeah, and it will be a while before it's ready to fly humans into orbit and beyond, goes without saying. But some very exciting steps. So we talked about Super Heavy before the break, and Starship itself, or the upper stage, made it to orbital velocity. But let's start with why they didn't put it into full orbit.
Yeah, Steve, that's a good question. I think they targeted a velocity that was just short of the speed they would need to reach what's known as a stable orbit. So to reach low Earth orbit, you have to be traveling a certain velocity, generally around 17,000 miles an hour, plus or minus, depending on the exact altitude. That allows the satellite to continue circling the Earth and with enough speed that the Earth's gravity will not pull it back to into the atmosphere. And SpaceX intentionally on this mission targeted a speed of about 16,500 miles an hour, so just a little bit shy of orbital velocity. And the reason for that is before they go into orbit and put the thing into space where it's going to stay for days, weeks, or months, they want to be able to prove that they can relight the Raptor engine, one of the Raptor engines on Starship, to do what's known as a deorbit burn, to kind of slow the velocity and guide it back into the atmosphere in a controlled manner. Because SpaceX and you know, space sustainability people who are interested in making sure there's not orbital debris that's clogging low Earth orbit, interfering with other companies' operations or SpaceX's own operations in many cases. They want to make sure that SpaceX can bring Starship, which is a giant vehicle the size of a 737, basically, the largest single flying object ever put into space. The space station is bigger, but it's made of multiple modules that were assembled. Yeah. So they want to be able to prove that they can bring it back in a controlled manner, because they don't want it stranded in low Earth orbit where it could become a debris risk. It could explode eventually, put shrapnel in low Earth orbit that could collide with other satellites. And they also don't want it coming back to Earth in an unguided way. They don't want it re-entering the atmosphere and, you know, over a populated area if it comes back in an uncontrolled manner, and it could pose a risk to people on the ground. And Starship is built out of stainless steel, as you mentioned up front in your introduction, which is actually a really good metal that can withstand some really high temperatures. So, you know, bringing Starship back uncontrolled, a lot of that's going to survive re-entry. It won't burn up fully, so that would create kind of a falling debris risk around the Earth. So they want to make sure they can not strand it in low Earth orbit. They want to prove they can bring it back intact in a controlled manner before they actually put it in space and leave it in space.
So they were able to get right to the edge of orbital velocity. So they were able to accomplish that. And what else did they do? We heard about payload doors. What about these Raptor engines? Were they able to relight these? What do we know? What were they able to accomplish on this short trip partway around the Earth?
Well, so they have three key demonstrations they wanted to do while they were in space. One of them was the payload bay door opening and closing, which by all accounts that worked as planned. So that they can open that door and deploy satellites. There were no satellites on this mission, but on future flights, they could have a stack of Starlink satellites or customer payloads on there. They could shoot out the side of Starship almost like a Pez dispenser. Yeah. So they tested that mechanism, and it appeared to work well. Another test they wanted to do in space on this flight was a cryogenic transfer test. And basically, the Starship burns on really super cold liquid oxygen and methane fuel. And they wanted to test the ability of Starship to transfer some of that really cold propellant from one tank to another inside the vehicle. And this is kind of a precursor to future missions where they want to be able to refuel Starships from one ship to another. Like, they'll dock together and refuel each other in orbit. That test, from what I've heard, was initiated. I haven't heard any results on whether it was completed successfully, but apparently the first part of that test was initiated as expected. So that's kind of a question mark there. The other test they did not do was to reignite a Raptor engine, one of the six engines on the Starship upper stage, in the vacuum and the airless environment of space. And they actually skipped over that because there was a control issue with Starship. It was rolling in orbit in a way that it wouldn't be safe to reignite one of the engines. So that's kind of – didn't seem like it was an engine problem. It was just a matter of the ship was spinning, and that would not allow this is me speculating, but potentially would not allow the fuel propellant in the tanks to actually get to the engine, because imagine spinning on a merry-go-round or a carousel.
Sure.
You know, you're talking about centrifugal forces that kind of would force some of the propellant away from the engine intake. So that's just me speculating, granted, but that the ship was spinning, and the SpaceX said that was the reason they didn't restart the engine. And that would be one big reason, I think, why the ship spinning would impact the ability to reignite the engine.
So the videos a lot of people have seen, and if you haven't, of the launch, there is a camera on top of the tower at launch. It is really cool, launching from Texas. The other video that's been replayed, millions, who knows, been seen by billions of eyes already, is the reentry phase. And they were able to use Starlink satellites to pick up the reentry in the past. They weren't able to transmit video, et cetera, of reentry and capture that part. What do we know, and we don't have a ton of time left, about the reentry? Because you talked about getting a vehicle into space, then controlling it in space, and then bringing it back safely to Earth is a challenge. Typically, since the very early stages, this is Yuri Gagarin and the Soviet Union and the first human to reach orbit and return safely back to Earth was Russian. And then of course, he had John Glenn and the Mercury program, and Gemini and Apollo were capsules. SpaceX uses a capsule. The Russians still use a capsule. The Chinese use capsules. The space shuttle is really the only other vehicle we're aware of to reach orbit and carry humans safely back to Earth, and we know how complicated the space shuttle and the heat shield was. That's going to be a gigantic challenge from Starship to figure that part out.
You're right, Steve. I think that the space shuttle is probably the closest analog or comparison to the design of how the Starship is going to be able to re-enter the atmosphere and be recovered, although the landing is a much different method. What we saw on the test flight, the video was just amazing, as I mentioned earlier. Seeing that play out live, it was unprecedented. We've seen replays. Sometimes they have cameras on some of the capsules or the shuttle, even where they would bring the camera back and replay it after they land. But seeing it all play out live was incredible. And seeing the plasma build up as this thing is coming in the atmosphere at 16,000-17,000 miles an hour, it's actually compressing the air in front of the capsule and stripping electrons away and ionizing these air molecules in the upper atmosphere that causes them to glow. They're basically electrified. And it was just seeing that pink hue, the orange glow of those ionized, that ionized gas build up around the winglets of Starship, the flaps and the main body was just amazing. And they didn't make it deep into the atmosphere this time. Not sure why. I might have been related to that roll or control issue we talked about earlier, but they got through the launch sequence this time. They've tested out and demonstrated and validated a lot of that. I think one of the next big things they need to focus on that may take a few flights to master will be the reentry process and making sure that the ceramic tiles, the heat shield all work out, and making sure they can control the ship in orbit to make sure it's in the right orientation to safely reenter the atmosphere.
Yeah, but still, all in all, I would think SpaceX, and then again, their partners at NASA, which are counting on this system to ultimately land humans back on the moon, have to be thrilled with the third flight to check a number of boxes, and they're on their way.
Exactly. Yeah, it is a learning process. The way SpaceX develops these rockets is kind of, a fly, fail, fix, fly again, which is usually a quicker way to develop rockets. It's a cheaper way to develop rockets, but the one caveat of that is you need to fly often. I think SpaceX is set up to fly again soon.
Yeah. Well, Stephen, great. Once again, really appreciate your work and Ars Technica. I check it out all the time. And once again, that is ARS and then Technica, TECHINICA.com. Stephen Clark, good to visit with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Have a good weekend.
Yeah, there he is on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Quick break. We'll have an update on the weather. Red flag warning in effect until 8 o'clock tonight. Very dry and very windy, and it will stay cool and windy for the next couple of days. We'll get into that momentarily. And then Bobby Nightingale will join us from spring training. It is winding down rapidly. Opening day a week from Thursday in Kansas City. We'll talk Twins. Here on News Talk,
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
WCCO. We are trying to track down Bobby Nightingale of the Star Tribune to talk Twins baseball, but we can tell you Twins were winners in the Grapefruit League today, 6-5. Twins rallied with 3 in the bottom of the 8th and then gave up a run in the top of the 9th. Twins still win 6-5 the final. The Twins 7-13 in the Grapefruit League really doesn't matter. Eddie Julian, a couple of walks today. Carlos Correa, 0-4 or 0-3 with a strikeout. Byron Buxton, a couple of hits, scored a run today. Royce Lewis had a 2-RBI double in the game today. Max Kepler, 0-3. Santana, 1-2 with an RBI in the ballgame today. Twins and Blue Jays from Dunedin tomorrow. No radio at noon, but the Twins are back on the radio on Monday as spring training rapidly winds down. Hard to believe the regular season opens already. It's crazy, in my opinion, to think that the regular season opens a week from Thursday in Kansas City. And I believe we have Bobby Nightingale, who covers the Twins for the Star Tribune, joining us right now. Bobby, good to visit with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and a busy day today, not only the regular spring training game, but that futures game, Twins and Rays, right?
Yeah, just got over, just ended in an 8-8 tie, but a chance for some of those young guys, kind of their first national TV game, first time they've, you know, some of them first time they've worn a Twins uniform in an actual game, so exciting for them, for the young.
And I think this is a phenomenal idea. I mean, I really like it, and Tampa Bay, they're in Port Charlotte training, so it's not far away. I think this is really a good idea in a showcase like this, and a chance, because really, a lot of these kids toil on the backfields in obscurity during spring training.
Absolutely. I mean, they're the ones that kind of, you know, especially guys that get drafted, they kind of disappear off the radar for 3-4 years at a time, you know, unless you're kind of a college guy that advances really quickly. So it's kind of a chance to say, like, you know, NBA, they're in the lineup right away. NFL, you see them right, you know, play them in college and you see them right away. So kind of a chance for MLB to say, hey, our prospects that are really exciting and might be part of the future in the next 2 or 3 years, you can actually see their progress versus not really hearing about them after they get drafted.
Yeah, and speaking of that, you did a piece on one of the Twins prospects, very highly touted, Walker Jenkins, and this was really a great read. Congrats to you on that. And I think during spring training, fans want to learn about these kids that at some point they're going to see in the major leagues in a Twins uniform.
Absolutely. And I mean, he's a guy that, you know, internally they're extremely high on. Obviously, he's a long way away. I mean, just got drafted last year, hasn't played higher than A ball. So still got time to grow, to get back to the major league level. But there's a lot of excitement in terms of what he's shown so far, just in terms of the tools. His personality is really popular with everyone kind of in Fort Myers, in terms of he is around the stadium staff a lot. He signs autographs all the time with fans a lot. So, you know, one of those exciting, kind of like the Royce Lewis, you know, of when he was working his way up. I get the sense it's a similar feel.
Yeah, and the way you describe him, a big, strong kid who has no problem getting his bat on the real hard stuff, because it seems like every arm you see, you know, top arms in the minor leagues and certainly guys in the big leagues, I mean, they're touching 100 miles an hour, and he's able to get the bat there.
Yeah, one stat that the Twins shared is that, you know, they track every pitch and every, you know, all the data from every game, and he only swung and missed at one fastball last year, and that's when he faced the number one pick, Paul Skeens, who won a College World Series championship with LSU, which tells you, you know, he's facing pretty much everyone who's older than him. He's able to catch up to the top fastballs, which is a great sign, but he stands out, and he looks like a middle linebacker more than a baseball player. Really built, works out in the offseason with Ryan Jeffers, so he's been around big leaguers, and, you know, that's something that, you know, beyond his physical skills, I think is something that the Twins are excited about, is just in terms of he knows kind of how to handle himself around older players.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point. We're so used to a lot of these top players having spent time in college or played a full 4 years of college, you know, in some of these marquee programs. But you got to remember, just 19 years old, and that, you know, that'll take some seasoning. Is there a sense where he might start the year? Is he going to make the jump to Double A, or has he got another year in A ball?
Yeah, I would guess they'd keep him here in Fort Myers just to start off the year. And then, so that's low A, and then Cedar Rapids, high A would be the next step. But you look at some of the guys recently, I mean, teams have been pretty aggressive with moving top prospects like Jackson Holliday with Baltimore. He started at low A last year and made it all the way to Triple A. Now he's the number one prospect in the sport and, you know, the son of Matt Holliday. So the bloodlines run strong there, but shows you how fast teams are, you know, if players perform well at a level, they won't hold guys for kind of like they used to for a full year. So definitely could see him move quick. And I get the sense the Twins won't hesitate to move him quickly if that's as long as he keeps performing.
Bobby Nightingale joins us, covers the Twins for the Star Tribune online at startribune.com. And I would assume we're at the point in spring training where all the veteran guys are like, okay, let's break camp, let's get it going.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you can tell it's getting a little bit closer. I mean, we're under 2 weeks away from opening day in Kansas City. So not that camp's wound down yet, but like Pablo Lopez pitched in today's spring training game, and he only has one more spring start before his opening day starts. So can finally start to see the finish line, I guess.
Yeah, and once again, a week from Thursday already in Kansas City, a rare day off, and spring training coming up in Tuesday. We should point out, Twins take on the Blue Jays in Dunedin tomorrow at noon. No radio, and then they have a matinee Monday against the Red Sox, and then no ball game on Tuesday before we jump back into it. And then, of course, the Twins will break camp a week from Tuesday and then head for Kansas City, have their traditional workout on the 27th, and then the season begins. Bobby, as we get to that point with about a week and a half to go in spring training, any jobs up for grabs, or do you feel like this roster is pretty set for that first series in Kansas City?
Yeah, I think it's very much set. I mean, more so than years past. I mean, you look at the position players, I think the 13 position players that they'll carry, 13 position players, 13 pitchers, I think those are the 13 are locked for on the position player side. And then the pitching side, I mean, the rotation is pretty much in stone. You know, Pablo Lopez, Bailey Ober, Joe Ryan, Chris Paddock. If Anthony DeSclafani is not healthy enough, Louis Barlin's your number five starter. If DeSclafani's healthy, then maybe that's him. You know, maybe there's a couple spots in the bullpen, but that's about it.
Yeah, and a good spot for the Twins to be in. Another development, and I brought up, you know, some of the highlights from the box score today. Really, really good things from Byron Buxton. Granted, it's spring training. You can't read too much into it, but all signs are pointing in the right direction for Buxton, which is huge for this club.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't read into stats, but I'd read into exactly how he's feeling. I mean, he's playing back-to-back games in center field. Today was about as, like, if it was a real game, as dominant as you could be for five innings. He was making diving catches, scoring from first on base hits. I think he had two hits himself. So, I mean, he looks like the old Byron Buxton. Obviously, health has always been the big question mark, but he wasn't flying around this way last year. I mean, he was playing through pain last year, and you've kind of seen what a healthy Byron Buxton looks like, which that hasn't been the case for a little while.
One of the other things that comes out of spring training is there are going to be guys optioned to St. Paul who in their mind think, I'm ready to be in the big leagues, I'm ready to contribute, I'm chomping at the bit. And we know there's going to be trips to the injured list. No major league team goes 162 without needing to dip into the minor leagues, some more than others, depending on how the year goes. But who are some of those guys that are headed for St. Paul that are going to be really the first guys to come up who have maybe impressed the spring, Bobby?
Yeah, I mean, Brooks Lee, one of their top field prospects, he jumps out. He's a switch hitter, jumps out immediately, kind of blocked in the infield right now, but probably an injury away. And he could play at second, third, or short. So a lot of avenues as long as he keeps hitting at AAA. Jose Miranda, you know, he's pretty much a first baseman only now, first base DH. But if there was an opening there, he'd be one of the early guys to get called up. He's been swinging pretty good in spring training. Just needs to prove he's healthy after he had his shoulder injury last year. And then pitching-wise, Simeon Woods Richardson, you saw him up briefly a couple times in the past, but he's throwing harder than he did last year. And that's been one encouraging sign for the Twins, is just kind of seeing his progress.
Well, Bobby, always good to visit with you. And once again, a terrific story in the Star Tribune. It was posted yesterday. Twins prospect Walker Jenkins has tools to be great. Really a good story. We invite people to check that out. And thanks again for the time, as always.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
All right, there he is, Bobby Nightingale, covers the Twins for the Star Tribune, online at startribune.com. And once again, a programming note, no radio tomorrow. Twins at Dunedin to play the Blue Jays. That is a noon start. So no ball game. rare Sunday off for the Twins on the radio, and then right back at it on Monday as spring training winds down. But, of course, we have the huddle. Pete Najeri and Dave Schwartz tomorrow between 10 and noon, and they have it all covered. When we come back, we'll talk some Wild, we'll talk some Timberwolves. All finals now, the Big Ten title game is set at Target Center. We'll get you that. And two championships will be decided at Williams Arena Girls Hoops. We have two titles in the books and two to go. We'll get to that in a moment here on News Talk. 830 WCCO. Big Ten tournament championship game is set. Illinois roared back, beat Nebraska 98-87. They'll play Wisconsin tomorrow. Wisconsin upset number three Purdue 76-75 in overtime. So it'll be the Badgers and the Illini tomorrow, Big Ten tournament. And I know the men's tournament, a lot of interest in it, but completely overshadowed by the women's tournament, Josh Wheeler and Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, and the attendance clearly shows
a
lot of people came to see one of the most iconic women's basketball players ever, to this point at least, last weekend. And it's kind of incredible. There's almost, I don't want to like say there's a lack of buzz, but there's almost more buzz for the women's tournament than there has been for the men's tournament, and that's with Purdue being in town, arguably one of the hottest basketball teams in college basketball together.
Yep.
And they lost today. They battled to the end, and they ended up losing to the number five team. I believe it was Wisconsin.
Yeah, Badgers win that one, so it'll be a Wisconsin and Illinois tomorrow. Girls State Tournament wraps up two title games tonight at Williams Arena. The 3A championship in Old St. Margaret's against De La Salle, and in the nightcap, Hopkins and Minnetonka in 4A at 8 o'clock. The great Dave Lee on the call on Channel 45. Earlier in the day, two titles. 2A, Providence Academy, trailed almost all the way all day. They were down 9-0 early. Albany led at the half. Albany led till very late in the game. Providence wins it 81-78. And in 1A, it was Goodhue beating Mountain Iron Buell 70-65. Boys State Tournament starts Wednesday at Target Center in the big schools. Wayzata is the number one seed, Park Center the number two seed. And the 4A tournament starts bright and early at Target Center once again on Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. So a great tournament over there. A couple other things I want to get mentioned. Loons against LAFC tonight, 7:30 at Allianz Field on the Midway in St. Paul. The Loons have points in their first three this year. Timberwolves on the road at Utah. No Cat tonight. Once again, that's an 8:30 start in the Wild and Blues. Wild still alive, Josh Wheeler. Can you believe it? The Wild, they won't die. They play the Blues tonight at 7 o'clock, and they're all playoff games now. They need points every night.
They need 2 points, and we learned that last week. Did you catch that extra man in overtime? It's pretty crazy. I believe it was last week, man. It's already been a week since that happened. But, yeah, they need all the points they can get. And St. Louis is a surefire team you need to beat. You face them today, and then you also face them I believe early next
week. In a week?
Yeah, in a week.
In a week. Yep.
You need to pick up both those games, and you need to get some of these soft games, if you will. I mean, they're only winnable.
Well, they have Ducks and Kings.
Yeah, they're only winnable
SoCal
games, though, if
weekend.
You win them. That's the thing.
Yeah, that's right.
And you need to win those games, which they've done okay, but before the All-Star break, they lost to the Ducks. They lost to Nashville. They lost to teams that, at the time, were not hot. And the Ducks are not hot, but Nashville is arguably one of the hottest teams in hockey in the last month. You can't lose. You have to be able to pull off a victory and get as many points as you can. I believe they need to go 11 of the next 15 with the wins to even just have, you know, your name in the conversation for a Stanley Cup berth or Stanley Cup playoff berth, I should say.
But They're hanging in there.
Yes.
Which is good news. Over at the U tonight, Minnesota, Michigan, Big Ten men's hockey semifinals. That is an 8 o'clock start at 3M Arena at Mariucci. Meanwhile, the Minnesota Golden Gopher women's hockey team in the quarterfinals of the NCAA tournament at Clarkson, they're still playing. Late in the third overtime, tied at 2. Once again, Minnesota and Clarkson tied at 2 with under a minute to go in the third overtime in that one. Insane. Ohio State blew out Minnesota Duluth 9-0 to advance to the women's Frozen Four. Number 2, Wisconsin shut out St. Louis 4-0, and Colgate beat Cornell 3-1. So it'll be Minnesota or Clarkson advancing to the women's Frozen Four. And, oh, by the way, a little golf. Players Championship, TPC Sawgrass down in Florida. Xander Schauffele at 17 under par. Wyndham Clark one back. Brian Harman 2 off the lead. Handsome leaderboard with 18 to play at the Players Championship down in Florida. Scotty Scheffler, he lurks 5 back. He is tied for 6th right now. So, big thanks to all our guests. Big thanks to our producer, Josh Wheeler, here on this Saturday afternoon. It's always fun. By the way, I'll be back Monday night sitting in for Henry Lake on the Lake Show. Henry taking a rare night off. Once again, I'll be in Monday night between 6 and 9 with Chris Tubbs here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Quick update on the weather. Red flag warning in effect until 8. Careful with open flames. 43 degrees. Winds howling out of the northwest at 26, gusting to 37. Windy overnight, low near 23. Tomorrow, some sun and 33.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.